huge savings on new and previously leased furnishings. That's right, huge savings. At Court Furniture Clearance Center, choose from our wide variety of new and previously leased furniture and decor for your home or office. You'll find sofas from $199.99 and more. Everything in our 9,000 square foot showroom is Court certified, guaranteed, and in stock, ready for delivery or to take home today. Visit our Chandelier Court Furniture Clearance Center at 13946 Lee Jackson Memorial Highway or go online at courtclearancefurniture.com. Mention Radio 20 and get 20% off.
The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
What do we have you this time?
Yeah, sorry about that. Skype is absolutely useless here. Really.
So how's the weather over there in the UK?
Rainy, kind of crap as usual.
Typical, yeah.
I think dangerous.
All the stereotype, you know, the pea soup fog.
Yeah, we had that this week as well. So.
You have a lot of folks walking around like Patrick McNee, you know, with the bowler and the brawley.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if you're ready, we can get rolling.
Yeah, cool, man. Good.
Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema and music. Tonight, British thrash metal pioneer Nige Rock and Onslaught on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Cinema, your source for music and film that matter, cult, underground, independent, and generally falling outside the mainstream corporate boardroom paint-by-numbers bullshit. Tonight, we speak with Nige Rocca of UK thrash pioneers Onslaught. Predating not only fellow British acts, but just about any thrash band worldwide, Onslaught delivered their legendary Power From Hell album all the way back in 1983. Progressing quickly from their punk rock roots to a more streamlined metallic sheen, they shifted roles internally to add aggressive vocalist Cy Keeler for their second record, The Force, still considered one of the greatest releases of the genre to this day. Following some major label interference and a brief run with Grim Reaper vocalist Steve Grimmett, the band called it a day. But nearly 15 years on, they're reunited for a string of notable releases, each more pummeling than the last. With their latest, simply titled Six, Onslaught show themselves to be more ferocious and unrelenting than bands less a third their age. Join us for an entertaining and informed discussion. That's a Freudian slip. Join us for an entertaining and informative discussion with guitarist and founding member Nige Rocca of Onslaught, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's Onslaught with A New World Order, followed by Chaos is King.
Thank you. Tonight, we're talking metal, and we have with us a man who very likely pioneered UK thrash metal. All the way back in 1983, before bands like Metallica, Exodus, and Anthrax had even landed a record deal, he and his band delivered a powerful opening salvo that owed as much to their punk roots as the more new wave of British heavy metal affectations the early thrash acts were known for. Undergoing a fairly radical personnel shuffle for their next release, they produced a classic record still revered among metal fans to this day. While another change in lineup led to the group disbanding in 1989, more than half the band's most popular roster reunited a decade ago, delivering three hyper-aggressive albums with a more brutal sound than acts less than a third their age. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming the one and only Nige Rocket of Onslaught. Nige, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Thanks, Doc. How are you?
Now, Onslaught was very likely the first UK thrash act, well before bands like Xentrix and Deathwish came along, but you were also really early on the scene worldwide. One thing that really marked Onslaught from the beginning was your punkier approach. While there's been a fairly close association all along between thrash and the mid-80s crossover variant of punk, you were definitely there first and most directly. So tell us about your journey from punk band to thrash act.
Like you say, we started off in 1983, formed me and a couple of schoolmates. As a punk band, we really couldn't play our instruments, you know? That's the honest truth. I mean, we used to follow bands all around the country, me and my best buddy, you know. When we were really young kids, we used to sleep rough to go and see our favorite bands and scrounging on the guest list because they'd see us so many times turning up in different places, they'd always put us on the guest list and stuff.
Right.
So it kind of got to the point, we love doing this, and like, why don't we do it ourselves, you know?
Right.
So that's exactly what we did. We scrounged together some money and got a couple of cheap guitars and borrowed some gear and stuff, and I just basically started off from there. Fortunately, I knew a guy who was in another punk band called Vice Squad.
Right.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, it is.
And he lived very close to where I was from, and he used to see us turning up at their shows, and I got talking to him, blah, 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 blah. And he invited me down, gave me a couple of guitar lessons, kindly enough, like, and it all kind of just built from there. A few lineup changes here and there, and sort of few guitar lessons more, and we started to find our feet a little bit, you know, started to make some music that kind of sounded a little bit tuneful, at least. I think we started to get a lot of interest. There was a really healthy hardcore punk scene in Bristol, and there was gigs every other week, really big ones as well, and a friend of mine was actually putting all the gigs on, so what he'd do, he'd put us on as one of the opening acts, and it just really kicked on from there. One of the guys who regularly attended, who was sort of pretty well known in the Bristol scene, he started up a record label, which was Children of Revolution Records, on a kind of government scheme. And I think they were giving him like £10 a week. I mean, it's probably quite a bit back then, but to start off a record label, which he did. And he'd obviously see us and seen where we were going and give us a deal. And that's where it basically all kicked off from. We made the Power From Hell album. And the rest is history, I guess.
Now, Power From Hell is a killer record. I mean, it's still in regular rotation around my house. But you started out with quite a different setup, with Paul Mahoney on vocals and Jay Stallard on bass, where they'd shuffle the bass and guitar respectfully for the Force. So
yeah.
What was the impetus for change between this sort of beefy, Venom-esque, punk-inspired approach that you had on Power From Hell and the more streamlined, direct, speed metal thrash sound that you had on The Force? Was it really just down to adding Cy Keeler on vocals, or was there something else going on?
Well, obviously, another year had passed, another 15, 16 months, and obviously the playing improvement was coming along a lot. And the kind of more metallic head started to come into the music as we started to learn to play better, you know?
Right.
And we felt then, obviously, because obviously, especially when you're playing solos, I wasn't the best soloist in the world. So we felt it just needed an extra guitar to fatten things up, you know, and start putting harmonies in here and there. And we wanted to be able to do that live as well as on record. So rather than get somebody new in terms of bass or guitar, we had a switch string because Paul Mahoney could play bass anyway. So it was a kind of natural thing to do, I guess, without adding any more members. But then side kind of came into the situation. He came down with one of friends of ours at rehearsal and just sort of said, "Oh, let me have a, can I, do you mind if I have a little sing?" So he's mucked around doing a lot of covers and that at rehearsal. And he started to sing and he's just like, "Wow." So I think we offered him the job there and then. Like, and it was like, and obviously he said yes straight away. And within, I think, probably maybe 2 months, he was in the studio recording the Force album. It was just that quick.
Wow.
And obviously it gave us a totally different sound again with his vocals from the Power From Hell.
Exactly. exactly. The Force is still considered not only to be a UK thrash classic, but a classic thrash album per se to this day. So why such a huge right turn into a more melodic mainstream metal feel with In Search of Sanity, which also brought in the legendary Steve Grimmett from Grim Reaper on vocals?
Yeah, I mean, it was never meant to be that way, to be honest. Obviously, the album was written with Ty. And it originally recorded with Sly. And we'd switched to a major label at the time, Polygram, which was a subsidiary, London Records, who'd invested a lot of money in us. And they were, I guess they were looking to emulate the success of Metallica on this one record, you know? They really wanted to break us, in the States in particular. I think that was a bit of an ambitious move for a first album. You know, these things need development. And they didn't like the way Sly's vocals were on that album. They didn't see it was kind of what they wanted to break the American market in particular, you know? And their train of thought was, well, we've invested so much money into the band, this isn't acceptable to us. We want to change it on the vocals, like, so. It was kind of forced upon us. There was so much money spent making the record and the marketing and stuff. Yeah. Really, they had us kind of over a barrel.
Right.
And it was a sort of situation where maybe we were going to be left on the shelf if we kind of didn't do what they were asking.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of where Steve Grimmett came in. I don't know how it actually happened, whether it was through the label or through our management who actually brought him into the sort of auditioning situation. But obviously Steve's a great vocalist.
Right.
And I think with the big name producer we had as well, everything got a little bit too slick and a little bit too polished. And a little bit too an onslaught, if you like.
Right.
Even though, I mean, the album sold fantastically well. But obviously, they had massive marketing budgets for us, et cetera, et cetera. And there are some great songs on that album. They just didn't turn out the way that they should have done.
Right.
In the end, yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of what happened. And it turned out to be the kind of beginning of the end.
And In Search of Sanity was different in another respect, in that you started doing covers. I mean, they had the AC/DC Let There Be Rock and an Angel Witch track as well. And you continued doing covers on a few EPs and even on Sounds of Violence a few years back.
Well, it started originally with the Let There Be Rock. We did it as a 12-inch single with Sly because obviously we had the song Let There Be Death, which
right.
was kind of a take on Let There Be Rock, you know, just on a non-slaught angle. And Sly used to wind the crowd up, and it was amazing that probably used to go, obviously shouting out Let There Be What, and everybody think we'd be playing Let There Be Death. And then we'd go into Let There Be Rock Live, and it was a complete surprise and a real kind of juxtaposition of what we were playing, you know. But it used to go down absolutely insane. So we released it when we were with Music for Nations as a 12-inch single, but then when we went to London, they wanted to release it again, and it was like, no, we really don't want this. We didn't see it as a very credible thing to do at all. And they actually wanted it included on the album as well, which was even worse for me. I mean, I hated it. I mean, it was okay. It was great doing it once, but to do it a second time in a different way and then put it actually on the album was really, like, I just despised the whole idea of it. I hated it. And obviously, I think the covers, I don't know how that appeared on there, to be honest. I actually made it on a record. I mean, I don't know. It was like, because like, things didn't happen like bonus tracks and all that then. So I really, I don't know, we recorded it for something. I just, beyond belief, I actually made it onto the album. I don't know. I mean, we've done some other covers as well. We've done Atomic Punk by Van Halen and Nice and Sleazy by The Stranglers. And they all appeared on B-sides and things. I don't know. But that was, how that appeared on the album, I don't know. Maybe it was meant for a B-side and they sneaked it on. It was kind of bizarre. And that's why it kind of tarnishes the album a lot for me, you know.
And what happened after that? Because you recruited yet another singer and doing some preliminary work on a fourth album that just never happened.
Yeah, I mean, Grimmett left after about a year, I think, for whatever reason. I don't know. I guess his name was back in the music industry again, and he went off and done a kind of solo project from there. So at the time, we obviously had expectations at the label. We didn't sell 2 million albums like they probably expecting us to or wanted us to. The A&R guy who brought us into the label was fired. Every act that he brought into the label was dropped from the roster. So off we went, you know. We were obviously working on new material. We got a new singer in, a guy called Tony Ahura. He's a very good vocalist again, but possibly not really onslaught sure on sports as well. Obviously, we keep harking back to Sly, and he's the one who the fans considered as the Onslaught singer. I guess we all felt the same as well. But things just didn't go well. I mean, I think we wrote about half an album's worth of material. I think we got offered a deal with an independent label in the UK. But things didn't really feel right, you know, and the relationship between everybody in the band wasn't too great. And it just fizzled out. And I think Nirvana and all that came along and just basically killed off thrash metal. It was on 1991 time, and that was the end of the road for us.
Right. Yeah, that was my next question. It's like, after folding the band in 1991, you guys apparently vanished from the music scene. So what was going on during your long absence from recording?
Well, I did a couple of projects after we split for maybe a year or two, trying some really weird stuff, mixing up sort of drum and bass with metal and stuff. It was kind of weird, and it was kind of good, but I think nobody really got it, you know? It was really unusual, and it was heavy, and it was quite insane, but again, it wasn't the time for something like that. Grunge was still really strong, and I don't think nobody got what I was trying to do. So. And then I did another kind of a project after that, which was very close to breaking, and that was how I met Jeff Williams, who's our bass player now. He was in a band with me. It was a band called the Power Junkies, and it was kind of Sex Pistols meets Metallica type thing. As a real raw punky kind of metal stuff, you know, more of a traditional punk style, not hardcore stuff. But it was a really good project, and we were kind of being courted by Rod Smallwood from Iron Maiden's manager, and it was going along nicely, and all of a sudden it just fell flat. I don't know why. I don't know whether Rod lost interest or what, but that kind of finished it for me. I mean, obviously with the disappointment of Onslaught ending and that being so close to getting somewhere and then not actually happening, I thought, right, I've had it with the business, and set the guitars under the bed, and there they stay for 10, 11, 12 years. I didn't touch it in between.
Now, you reformed the band in 2004, and I understand was it the instigation of longtime drummer Steve Grice?
Yeah. I mean, I think he became aware that the Force album and Power from Hell had been reissued on a label. Done some research and found out they were actually selling lots and lots of units, so it was obviously there was an interest out there for the band once again. And just basically had a chat with everybody and to see what everybody thought. And I think obviously the only way it was going to work was with Sly coming back. And everybody sort of said, yeah, let's give it a shot just to see what happens. And it was really tough at the beginning, trying to play that kind of stuff after such a long layoff. It was really, really hard. And it sounded absolutely shocking on the first 3 years. But we got back to a decent standard after about 6 months, I guess.
So you, Steve, and Slack Killer from the Force Era have been working steadily ever since, with Killing Peace under the production of Sabbath's Andy Sneap, now more known as a producer for the likes of Killswitch Engage, Arch Enemy, Exodus, and Creator, and then moving to AFM Records for Sounds of Violence, and now Six. But yep. One thing that strikes me odd is you no longer take the lead guitar chair. You ceded that role to first Alan Jordan and now Andy Rosser Davies. Now, it's clear that Andy has a certain level of neoclassical flair to bring to the table, but why is that? It's not like you couldn't handle the leads.
Yeah, it was in a way, to be honest. Like I said, I'd not played for 10 or 12 years, and somebody said to me the other day, oh, it's like riding a bike. You can pick it up and do it all over again, but no, it's not. I mean, I always prided myself on my rhythm playing more than anything, and that took a long time to get back to where I wanted it to be and better than how it was before, you know? So to get back the lead guitar playing as well, which I really didn't have time to put that in, you know? I mean, obviously, because of the situation, financial situation, the business side of the music industry these days, you can't be fully professional. It's just not feasible for a band unless you're right up there at the top. There's just not the money to earn, so we have to have secondary work, you know, and then whilst writing music for the band as well, I just didn't have the time to really put in and really get my chops back on the soloing side. So he thought, well, if I haven't got time to do it, I don't want to make a half-assed job of it, so let's get somebody else in who can, you know? And that was the way it went. I mean, I've worked on all the solos on all the albums anyway, so, I mean, it's not as though I'm not involved in them or have any input, and it's just I'm not playing them. So. But I personally prefer it anyway, to be on stage with no pedals in front of me and just to thrash away. I mean, that suits me down to the ground.
I also see that Steve Grice, who had been with you since Power from Hell back in 83, is no longer with the band. So what happened there?
That's a good question, actually, and I still don't really know the answer. He quit. We just released the Sounds of Violence album, and he quit 2 weeks before the tour.
Wow.
Which obviously was done intentionally, and I don't know. He did from what we can gather, he didn't want a tour. He didn't like the touring schedules. He was quite happy playing like the old show on a weekend and the festivals, but didn't want to go away for long stretches, which was necessary to make this band keep moving forward, you know. And he just dropped it on us 2 weeks before we were due to kick off with the first tour in support of that album, which was like pretty tough.
Yeah.
Fortunately, Jeff, our bass player, knew of Michael Horahan because they live in the same city, and he said, "Look, I'll ask him." So I knew he knew he was free at the time, so he gave him a call, and he said, "Yeah, I'm up for this." He said, I think I can do it, no problem. So we basically had 12 days to learn 14 songs. Me and him just rehearsed solidly all the time, every day, every night. And he did it. He pulled it off. And the first date on that tour was actually in Hamburg, in Germany, which is the home of our label. So all the label were there to see their band play the new album, and all the press were there. And it was pretty nervous. And Mike just played an absolute blinder. He just played it absolutely beat perfectly. He didn't drop a note all night. And it was... Yeah. We pulled it off. It was incredible.
Wow, it's like a trial by fire.
Yeah, it certainly was.
Now, the music these days is extremely aggressive, far more so than the classic Onslaught material, but even more so than dozens of younger acts that came in your wake, which is surprising. So why this particular approach?
Because I'm an angry dude, man.
Yeah, you sound it.
I mean, it's... There's a lot of things that piss you off in the world, isn't there? So why not? I mean, the music's aggressive, the lyrics are aggressive. I know, yeah, just the more albums you write, the more angry I want to make it. You know? So it's great for getting some frustrations out of yourself, for sure. But then it just seems the natural way we're going. I don't know. I mean, we're loving every minute of the writing, and as you say, it's getting more aggressive all the time, and it's nice to challenge ourselves to make the next record as brutal as possible.
Yeah, and that said, there's definitely some of the traditional Onslaught riffing going on, particularly in tracks like Crucifixion and Enemy of My Enemy. So it's still Onslaught. It's just, you know, even more balls to the wall than ever.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we look back. Whenever we're writing a new album, we look back at what we did good on certain songs in the past and what we did wrong in certain songs. And you obviously got to keep the core elements of the band in there. But at the same time, there's we're not going to get anywhere by standing still and rehashing previous albums. So
right.
We've always got to look at ways to take the band forward. So I think the new album, V1, is definitely, as you said, the most aggressive one. It's almost probably almost technical one as well. So, I mean, Mike in the band has allowed us, again, to open up the musical horizons a hell of a lot, because he can basically play anything we throw at him and whatever crazy riffs we come up with.
Right.
He come up with something that is nuts on the drums, you know, so there's really no restrictions for us at all now. He can play so fast, and his feet are incredible with the kick drum, so it just gives us a whole new unlimited scope of music, so we're gonna take that to the max, you know?
So any upcoming tour plans you want to mention? Are you heading across the pond to see us here in the colonies?
Yeah, well, we just come back from Russia, which was the kind of first leg of the tour. We did 7 shows there, which was absolutely amazing, very interesting and very tough. But that was great. We kick off in 2 weeks' time in the UK for the European leg of the tour. We're out for about 3 weeks, I think. And then we're going to obviously take a little break, Christmas and stuff, and start working on some new songs for the next album while we have a little bit of downtime. And we're talking to our booking agent in the US about April, May next year for North America and Canada. So.
Nice. So do you have anything you'd like to plug, or do you want to point listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the new album's the priority. As I was saying, it's only come out like 4 days ago in the US, so obviously that's high priority at the moment. It's getting people to check that out. I mean, we've had the reviews for it has been beyond belief. We've just been blown away by the response to the album, so just hopefully it transfers into the positives and moves the band on, you know. So obviously we want people to check that out, and obviously you can check things out also on our main Facebook site, which is www.facebook.com/OnslaughtUK. Which is the main site, really, I guess. So.
Well, with that, Nigel, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema. And, you know, we'd love to have you back on to talk your next album.
Yeah, pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
All right. So thanks again. And, you know, seriously, when you guys come in the area or the next time you got an album out, we'd love to talk to you again.
Please see you next year.
Hopefully so.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
Cheers. Take care. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Nigel Rocket of Onslaught.
Stay tuned for one more from Onslaught and here on Third Eye Sound.
Hey, this is Kara from Mortillery, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Rock the fuck out. I don't know. Do you want me to do it again? Hey, it's Kara. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Okay, I'll do it again. Just play, like, all the retakes so people can laugh at it. Hey, this is Kara from Mortillery, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Okay. Here you start out.
Hi, this is Mirai from Psy, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Dr. McCannibal from Psy. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, everyone. This is Nolan from Kryptos. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Was that good? Hi, everyone. This is Nolan Lewis from Kryptos, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, guys. This is Rohit here from Kryptos, and you're listening to Third Eye. Okay, I'll say that again. Okay. Hi, this is Rohit from Kryptos, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Yeah. Melon.
Yeah,
and all that TK stuff.
Hi, this is James Murphy. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
This is Rick Ross from Massacre, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Udo Doxano, the singer of UDO, and you're listening to the show Third Eye Cinema.
And to close out our interview with Nige, here's another one off of Six. This is Concrete Jungle, Crucifixion. you enjoy our interview with Nigel Rocco of Onslaught. In 2 weeks on Third Eye Cinema, Paul Logue of Eden's Curse and Ica Fries of Dark Age. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or if you're a filmmaker or musician you'd like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network and Talk. Or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience. And in 2 weeks.
Hi, folks. This is Ike Fries from Dark Age and listen to Third Eye Media. We are really happy to be on the show, so check out our stuff. See you soon. Oh, sorry. Do you want to do it again? I can do it again. Okay. Hi, folks. This is Ike Fries from Dark Age. Listen to Third Eye Cinema. We're really happy to be on the show, so check out our stuff, and see you soon.
Hey, this is Homer Simpson. Why don't you do yourself a favor and check out the new Eden's Curse album, It's called Symphony of Sin. I love it, especially when they give away free donuts!
I'll do your normal one if you want.
Sure, go ahead.
Hi, this is Paul Logue from the band Eden's Curse, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Keep rocking. Stay cursed.
Huge savings on new and previously leased furnishings. That's right, huge savings. At Court Furniture Clearance Center, choose from our wide variety of new and previously leased furniture and decor for your home or office. You'll find sofas from $199.99 and more. Everything in our 9,000 square foot showroom is Court certified, guaranteed, and in stock, ready for delivery or to take home today. Visit our Chandelier Court Furniture Clearance Center at 13946 Lee Jackson Memorial Highway or go online at courtclearancefurniture.com. Mention Radio 20 and get 20% off.